Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Evans.
And I'm Katie Evans.
And this is Unwrapping Foil, a way to get a peek behind the curtain, so to speak, of Foil, Legacy's theater arts program.
This year, on April 10th, Legacy Foil turns 10 years old.
So we wanted to take the time to share Foil's story, from where it started to where it is today. In the last episode, we talked about why we even had a play at all.
Well, that would be because God told me I had to. Well, not specifically put on a play, but I was instructed to give community to kids at Legacy who needed it.
But we haven't shared too much about the play itself and the experience. To illustrate what those early years looked like, we spoke with former Legacy student, class of 2018,
D'Artagnan Elliott, and I got to be in the very first Foil show, the very first six shows, actually. I did plenty of theater at that time, and at this point, I've had a career of about 16 years with stage performance, including performing at Walt Disney World for a while as well. And now I'm at a graduate school at Columbia University for business and psychology.
Nobody else in there knew that I was clueless. Nobody did. You knew.
What are you talking about?
I want to tell listeners, like I did last time, that I was in no way qualified to do this myself. It was 100% being divinely equipped and provided for via other individuals who were more knowledgeable and skilled. No. Maybe 97%. I made up the last tiny percentage with my character flaw of thinking that I can do absolutely anything, despite all signs pointing to the contrary. I thought, I'd been on stage about 10 years ago. How hard could it be?
Good question. I can't say if it's because you didn't know how hard it was going to be or because you were simply that determined, but I'm so glad that the first time something hit you in the face, you looked and you decided to go twice as hard the next time.
Right. So, hit in the face. Yes. So we're about halfway through with the play process, and we've been practicing in the morning in the front of my classroom, which is about a, 6 by 10 foot space. And we kept putting desks in place of a table for the Mad Hatter. And I'd speak theoretically about a key for Chandler to hold while she wore a golden tutu. And the students playing the Doors will have like a hole for their face and all of these things. And I'm suddenly like, oh my word, how do I get the props and the costumes? Like, where do they come from? Who sources these things? And let's just cue some massive panic.
You don't panic nearly as often as you used to.
Now, hindsight being 2020 and all that, if God told me I should do this, I should have trusted that I was going to be equipped. Or somebody who was equipped was going to come help me. But that didn't occur to me while I was freaking out. If nothing else, 10 years of Foil has massively grown my faith. But back then I was panicking. So one day this magical woman, your mother, D'Artagnan.
I want to hear more on this. Viewers at home, all that. My mom is a very, very soft, quiet personality. Not loud or outspoken. Typically will be the person standing in the back of the room listening. However, she's 5'11 and an ex-drill sergeant. In the military, when she needed attention, she was not the loud voice who's insulting people as if we're in a movie from the 80s. She was quiet and it was scary and you got in line. Again, she is the drill sergeant, and I hope that everyone who hears the podcast thinks of her as Drill Sergeant Elliott as we continue this story.
Oh man, great description. So Sergeant Elliott comes walking down the hall in her very quiet, unassuming way and asks me something like, I have some experience costuming. Would it be stepping on your toes if I were to help? Now, whether her son noticed our plight and told her or not, this was music to my ears. And mentally, I'm falling on the ground in gratitude. But outwardly, I hope I said something very cool and gracious, like, oh, what a generous offer. I would be delighted to take you up on it. I think more likely I stood there in shock and maybe cried. I feel like we should interview your mom and find out exactly what happened. I think it'd be cool to hear her side of the story. So your mom, Diane, not only saved my bacon by pulling together the costumes, I distinctly remember her making this very cool caterpillar costume out of a sleeping bag, I think.
That was my sleeping bag, yeah.
It was yours? That's so much better.
I went home and said, well, what do we have?
Yeah, her offer to help me with the costumes broke through this ridiculous notion that I had that I had to do all of this on my own because this was my project. I had to do it. But I suddenly thought maybe there's help available. And so I reached out to Di Faraby, our art teacher at the time, to see if she'd be willing to paint some backdrops. And she also said yes. And they were gorgeous.
See, the role I remember her more, and I love hearing this behind the scenes part, the role I remember her more as was the show coordinator, which, I don't know, how would you best describe that for a non-theater audience? What is the show coordinator?
A show coordinator is someone who can help organize parent committees, can help organize correspondence, is really in charge of making sure that the show happens. It boils down to the logistics piece, which is pretty incredible because you frequently have somebody who's directing who's extremely artistic and creative, but not necessarily as organized and as on the ball with all the paperwork as one might hope, though some of us do try. But this taught me that we could actually have a whole team, or at least a small team, a very small team of two, that could work together and make these shows better because of it.
That's a great one. I don't know if this is a soundbite you want or not, but fun analysis real quick. When we look at the structure of a artistic director and a show coordinator, because you have these two systems of power, and sure, everyone listens to the director, but they actually run the operations. Is one technically the other's boss? How does this work? They have to work together, but so recognizing all that, the business case I read one time and I was like, wow, I know what this looks like in theater. Is in Disney, you have a tradition of having one CEO that is the dreamer, Walt, and then a president or similar role that is the realist, which was Roy. Walt said, we're going to have animals, it's going to be a jungle, it's going to be magnificent. And Roy said, great, let's look at our budget. And Walt was able to be himself because it's like when you have a small platform and two objects leaning apart, when you connect them with a cable, they can both hold each other. Walt only ever got to be the dreamer Walt because he had his brother watching his back. And his brother would have never tried any of this Disney stuff in the first place. It was him supporting the dreamer.
I know I speak for both of us when I say thank you immensely, Diane Elliott, for being the realist and show coordinator so that Katie could be the director and dreamer for Foyle in those early days.
So when people ask me what are some of my favorite moments in all of Foyle, I can think of four like almost immediately, and you feature in two of them.
I've just to share on the podcast and everything, I'm not sure what it would be.
Before Katie explains her memory from Alice, I have to explain the memory from Honk Jr., which is a musical about the story of the ugly duckling. In the scene, the mom, Ida, is looking over this giant egg in her nest and singing about how that one is different, as Ugly, played by D'Artagnan, is about to emerge from his shell. I can't tell you how many times I think of this scene in D'Artagnan's performance, and amazingly, I found a clip from a rehearsal of this scene. So what you're going to hear is a bunch of rustling, which were umbrellas to replicate the eggshells that were about to burst. And at the very end, you will hear D'Artagnan.
Good.
Thank you again, D'Artagnan, not only for allowing us to share that clip, but for your amazing performance and for such a wonderful memory. Now, back to Alice.
So, don't know if you remember this, but while we probably could have pulled it off if we had done like costume changes to have enough cards.
Yeah.
Instead, you played all three. Do you remember this?
I remember.
And so your costume, you had each number and like the ace and whatever on all the different places. And you had a different voice and different mannerisms
for these rapid fire lines. And you made it to like where you pointed at whichever one you were, but changed everything. It is one of the most brilliant pieces of acting that I've seen.
I so appreciate that version of it because there are other roles I've thought back to more often and a lot has happened in the last 10 years. I remember, sure, I played cards and I played a cook and then I was the blue caterpillar. In my mind, I remember we did not have a play ever before. I am a freshman in high school and it's a really rough freshman year for me. And, oh, guess what? Someone's starting a play. Do I want to do a play? And I'd done theater before in community theater. Rehearsal times were typically before school. So if you can just, and I lived about an hour away from the school, as long as I could wake up and my mom could drive me that extra hour and a half in the morning, then I could do 20 minutes of rehearsal before school starts. And so that was the dynamic. And for me, that was very, very special and meant a lot. I very much felt like I didn't fit in my class. So to suddenly have a group that is assigned to me of other people that we're all nice to each other, those 20 minutes really meant a lot. So in those rehearsals, there was a specific one, the people who were cards did not show up for rehearsal. And I was kind of irritated because for me, this is a very special time and other people aren't taking it seriously. And it feels like at this point, more it's growing, more people aren't taking it seriously. And, oh, we can't try the scene until other people. So I was irritated. I said, fine, I'm going to read for the characters. Let's just do the scene. And I was crossing a line. So I, as this obnoxious 14-year-old, just start saying, fine, nope, this is how we're doing things. This is what's going to happen. And I cast myself as I'm going to read for all three. And I just decided to have fun doing it while engaging with other people. And I thought, this is a decision that's going to last for 3 hours and then be undone. Sure, whatever. I'll do those three roles. I'll keep reading for this part while I need to read for it. Skip ahead a few weeks. I am playing 5 characters instead of 2. And I get to have all these, apparently a memory that was special for you. I thought it was just one day that Alice needs to get to read the line and practice. Alice cannot practice. I'm going to temporarily step in, cross the line a little bit so that Alice can get more rehearsal.
I'm really glad that you spoke up and took ownership of that moment. I use that whole Ace of Cards bit as an illustration of what a very creative person can do with making character choices all the time. And so I really like hearing your version of this story versus like what I remember. And it kind of makes me wonder about how many different pieces in our history have very different versions, depending on who you ask. So you graduated in 2018. So there probably weren't very many extracurricular offerings at the time.
Because we weren't big enough yet to have, I don't think we had NJHS. I don't think we had STUCO. Like, did we have any of that?
These are foreign terms. You are either on the football team or you alone are an individual. Like, I did not think of it as I belong to a collective of people who choose to not be on the football team. I was the weird kid not on the football team. And at the time, if you look at the actual statistics of how many people participated or not, we were fully a sports school. There was not another option. I even remember as it's like, okay, we're going to have a rehearsal in the hallway before anyone else is willing to show up to the school. Part of that was, and I mean, it felt like there is so few of us who do not fit this sports model.
That was kind of my impression of the students as well, is that we had people who had a place and then people who didn't. And the tricky part was like there would be just a few in 9th grade and a few in 10th grade and a few in 11th grade and a few in 12th grade. And how are y'all supposed to bond?
But now Legacy has so many opportunities for students to thrive. Academic offerings, leadership, community service-oriented programs, lots of athletic teams, a robust robotics program, and several performing and fine arts organizations, not just theater. Okay, back to the cards. You told me that not everyone was as invested as you felt, which I'm actually glad, because otherwise I wouldn't have this incredible memory of you as the schizophrenic cards. But I imagine that was really, really frustrating.
So why did you stick around and continue doing shows with us then?
I didn't want to keep going to Legacy at that point. The only thing that made it tolerable was 20 minutes of the older girls being nice for a minute that made me think it was worth getting up that hour and a half extra, all that, to get to school for those little interactions, which later ended up actually becoming a physical building, but for me at least became a few more friends.
By physical building, do you mean the PAC that's being built at Legacy?
Yeah.
Awesome. Not only was Legacy a lot smaller in 2015, the resources for that first show was a lot less than we have to work with today. If you remember seeing Bah Humbug or Tuck Everlasting, those shows had somewhere between 28 and 30 mics. But for Alice...
one wireless mic. Alice wore that. And then I think we had two or three handheld mics that y'all passed around. Yep. Did that sound right?
Two. I don't think we had three.
So the first thought that goes through my head as you're describing this is, wait, they had to pass around mics. How on earth is that going to affect the actual staging and where we place each person on the...
Well... This isn't... So if I recall correctly... I think what we did, because the only thing I really remembered from my high school theatrical experiences was that it was very important to create stage pictures in order to help tell the story. And so for all the scenes we did, I was like, this is where everyone ultimately needs to be. Now, the process of getting there is a very fluid scene. I don't think I really did a whole lot of extra blocking in that situation except to be like, okay. Or if there was something really funny, we wanted to emphasize maybe that.
The memory I have of all that, other than I must mention, we had this portable stage that we put in the gym so we could all be elevated by about 3 feet, maybe 4 feet. But the stage every about 8 feet or so would fold in. And if one person was standing at an 8 foot increment from another person, the combined pressure would make the stage collapse in on itself. And of course, it's me. I like going all out for roles. If I'm going to sprint and a bunch of force suddenly goes down on a single spot, stage goes down, foot falls through the stage. The other memory I have is I have this very silly card outfit with all that on. I played the cook too, so I have this creepy large mustache and facial hair painted on and a ladle. And then I was the blue caterpillar, so for bows, we put on the blue hat and all that. So I'm just this freaky AI-generated image. And after the performance, two guys from my class walk up. They're nice. I said, that was great. Can we take a picture with you? And I gotta admit, because I was the theater kid before there was a show. I remember getting prank called. They'd be at a party and them calling saying, no, this is Broadway. Will you sing us something? Will you audition? And that was what I was used to before. The show happens. People want photos. And instead, these two guys just continued to be nice. And I was on edge. I just kind of kept waiting for, like, the other shoe to drop. And the two guys just kept hanging around and being nice about it. And I was so confused. It was more comfortable being on stage as a rapping cook that also is dressed as, like, all that nonsense. It was far more comfortable than the social situation. It turned out the next show that you hosted, one of the two guys, like, the night before auditions, ended up deciding that he wanted to do the show and auditioning, and he ended up becoming my best friend through all of high school and a little bit of college too. That in itself wasn't even the big moment. I remember when the guy auditioned and me thinking, wait, I might actually become friends with this person. But it was those seeds planted the year before that ever allowed any of that to happen, because they were nice enough to want to interact after the play.
Okay, so I think that story may underscore exactly why God thought this play was necessary and why it needed to continue beyond that one night only showing of Alice.
It makes me wonder, at the end of Alice, show happens, the people that showed up clap, it's over. It happened. What was going through your head that evening? Once the show, great, we did our performance.
Well, you probably don't remember this, but we were all backstage and having this little huddle right before we go on. I think it was Jacob. I don't know if it was Jacob. It might have been another student. But he was like, so what show are we doing next year? And I was like, No. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, no, we did this thing so good. Somebody who knows what they're doing is going to step in and do something with this. But like, clearly that's not me. I don't know what I'm doing. So that whole show, I don't actually remember much about the show itself. Yeah. I remember everything before it and I remember after it. But that whole show, I was sitting there thinking, these kids want another show.
I knew I was supposed to put on this play, or at least do something to create community for these students. And honestly, it didn't feel like taking a big chance at first, because at the time I was just hubristic enough to think I could do anything. But about halfway through that show, I knew I was risking my reputation as an employee at Legacy and as a fairly respected high school English teacher by the students. I valued the fact that I was a professional and that I knew what I was doing as an English teacher, and it started to feel a whole lot scarier than it did at first. Audra May, head of school, walks up to me after the show, and she told me she loved it. The relief I felt in that moment felt like taking a deep breath for the first time in over 2 months. That positive feedback, as well as the students' giddy shouts and cheers and giggles backstage, that was exactly what I needed to keep going at the time. Plus, a whole bunch of students asking me what's next. So I guess we don't just have a play. We have a program now.